Looking to propel your commercial real estate project forward? At Associated Bank, we've got you. With long-term relationships, expertise in your market, and prompt callbacks on inquiries. Contact a relationship manager today at associatedbank.com/CRE. Member FDIC.
We're on with Dan Behrens, Senior Vice President in the Commercial Real Estate Group at Associated Bank. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, Steve. Good to hear from you.
I'm going to focus our first part of the conversation on rent. A new report says the Chicago area ranks among the nation's most expensive rental markets. This was a report done by Harvard University's Joint Center for Housing Studies and says that the Chicago area ranks in the top 11% of U.S. housing markets when it comes to rent. Talk to us a little bit about this report and why we need to pay attention to it.
This is extremely important, Steve, and I think it's not shocking, I don't think, for a lot of people who are kind of involved with commercial real estate market. I mean, there's really no surprise that rents have jumped this much over the last couple of years. You know, there's a couple of things working against rent in, you know, particularly, let's say, in the Chicago area right now. High interest rates, you have construction material costs. They've all made it difficult for developers to build kind of affordable apartment units. They just can't charge high enough rent to pay the debt service to the bank and, you know, they pay the return to their equity. So most of the apartment development that's going on in the Chicago area right now is really focused on the high-end Class A units that generate a higher rent. You know, so with fewer affordable units being built, there's just less supply. And what that means is obviously supply and demand. The rent is going to continue to increase even on the smaller affordable or, you know, quote-unquote, more affordable units. You know, it's just a pain point for people who are out searching for more cost-effective rent. And that supply is just continuing to dwindle by the day. I mean, unfortunately, there's, you know, another kind of consequence of that higher rent. Potential first-time home buyers aren't able to save up money for a down payment, so they have to buying a home. For them is more difficult because of the higher interest rates and, you know, as a side note, higher property taxes. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna add a couple of data points here. First of all, the rent, the average rent, it said, this report says, is $1,400 now. That compares to a year ago when it was $1,290. And I guess what? That's about a 4% increase, maybe a 4.5% increase. I mean, talk to us a little bit about how long that's sustainable. If we see this kind of increase every year, I mean, that's not sustainable, is it?
No, it's definitely not sustainable. But the problem is you know, myself or my organization as a bank, you know, we are, you know, charging interest rates on these developers. But I mean, we really kind of go in lockstep with how interest rates run across the country and the Fed sets the interest rates. So until interest rates start to normalize, we're not going to be able to see enough development in order to bring the rental increases back down or the rent back down to a sustainable level. And, you know, oddly enough, as we're talking about this, I have a concrete data point. I'm looking at an apartment construction loan right now on the north side. And, you know, to illustrate how few units, apartment units are being built, only 600 units are currently being built or are currently under construction in what we call the North Lakefront submarket. I mean, this is a huge part of the city. It goes all the way from basically Foster on the north to River North in the south and, you know, Pulaski all the way to the lake. In that entire part of the city, only 600 units are currently under construction. And that's a huge drop off from in 2022. I pulled some stats here. In 2022, there were 2,800 apartment units being built. And that's down from a high of in 2018. There were 4,500 units being built. So to go from 4,500 units being built in 2018 to 600 currently, there's just no way the supply is going to be able to be built up enough in order to drag prices back down to make them even somewhat affordable for the majority of earners that live in the city.
You mentioned interest rates, but the Chicagoland Associated General Contractors Group told this reporter that did this story that part of the situation is also the tariff policies of the Trump administration, because building supplies have become so expensive that that's probably what's impacting the lack of those construction projects, right?
Yeah, that's certainly not helping. I mean, interest rates are one thing, but to have two of those really strong headwinds blowing in your face, it's really difficult for developers and for general contractors. You know, when they're trying to negotiate a GC contract and a budget for a development, if they don't know what their prices are going to be in 3 months, it makes it very difficult to say who's going to be on the hook if prices increase for, you know, let's say for windows. We need to get windows. If they come from China, if they come from Asia, if you don't know if those windows are going to cost $200,000 or $1 million, who is going to eat that extra $800,000 cost? I mean, that is, it's a real fear, and it's something that developers and general contractors and subcontractors need to figure out, because if there's an $800,000 price increase, work's going to grind to a stop. People need to figure out what's happening. So that's really a major stumbling block for development.
So Dan, with so few projects in the pipeline, and I know you're not a math expert, but talk to us a little bit about how long it would take for us to get to a point where we might see some of these rent prices come down or become at least more affordable. And if that will ever happen, I mean, because we all know once prices go up, they rarely ever come down.
Well, real estate is cyclical. So there's absolutely going to be a point where enough development happens, where oversupply happens, because developers are, by their nature, naturally optimistic. So they're going to continue to build. I think we are a long way off, unfortunately. I can't tell you exactly when, but I know with the amount of units that are being delivered currently, it's going to take years, in my opinion, for enough supply to be delivered that prices start to normalize. You know, with 600 units being built in that large of a area in the city, it's just not sustainable to, you know, to stabilize rent prices.
This Harvard report also said that nearly half of renters in the Chicago area are cost burdened, meaning that they don't make enough money really to survive. They're spending more than 30% of their income on housing and utilities. And with rent going up, that's only going to get worse.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, unfortunately, wage growth, we have a strong economy. And I think if the economy were to fall into a recession, if there are layoffs, that'll be a catalyst that could slow down rent growth, right? Because, I mean, you can only charge $3,000 for a one-bedroom apartment if you have people willing to pay $3,000 for a one-bedroom apartment. But if you're looking to, if you lose your job, you're going to move back in with your parents. You're going to find a roommate. You're going to find somebody else to live with to reduce your, you know, your living expenses. So that would be the other catalyst that would say this is the reason why rent's going to come down if there's a recession, if people start losing jobs, and not just a normal real estate cycle, which would, you know, overbuild, and now we have oversupply. So I think if there's a recession, if that forces the, you know, kind of the blood in the streets, there's layoffs, there's mass layoffs, people can't afford to live where they're living, that's when they move, that's when they change locations, that's when rents would also, you know, potentially come down.
I want to talk a little bit about some good news. This is in the suburbs. There's a report that there's a suburban shift that is positive where medical office space is concerned, that there's been some growth in that sector. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so a lot of the medical office buildings that are being built now are out in the suburbs, and I think that makes plenty of sense, right? Our population is getting older, and it's not really concentrated in one central area. So hospitals, medical systems kind of are adapting to that population trend by building medical offices near where the people are, which are, you know, for the most part in this area, in the suburbs. There's available land, and a lot of the hospital systems are based in the suburbs. You know, hospital systems really use these medical office buildings as kind of a hub and spoke model for their businesses. You know, if you have if you need a knee replacement, a hip replacement, or even if it's as simple as, you know, I need to go see my family doctor, my pediatrician for my kids, it doesn't make sense for you to drive to, you know, a large hospital where they don't want all that regular, everyday, easy foot traffic coming in and out. They'd rather have that at one of their spoke locations, one of their, you know, smaller single-story, two-story, small medical office building that's basically just Advocate or just Northwestern, and they can see the patients. Doctors will spend a couple of days a week there. They're in and out. The outpatient stuff is really lucrative for the hospital system, and it's beneficial for the customers because I don't want to bring my kids to a hospital where there are sick people, where there's, you know, all the activity. I'd rather just have them go to a small suburban location, get treated, be in and out in under an hour, hour and a half. So I think this really makes a ton of sense for both parties involved, both the patients and the doctors and the medical groups that are running these medical office buildings.
Yeah, and then from a landlord-tenant standpoint, some of this growth has been in the Chicago suburban markets, but also in Northwest Indiana. One of the things about these medical tenants is that they I want to ask, are they building new space? Are they taking up existing space? And then when they do, they're really signing long-term leases for these locations, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, when you have medical office, that's a very specialty build out than just like a general business office use. So they have specialty equipment, x-rays, they have lab, you know, space, they need to do all that kind of build out. So it gets really expensive. So yeah, they're definitely signing long-term leases because some of that money is coming from, a big chunk of that money is coming from the tenant, the medical user, in order to build out that space for their practice. So that's not something they want to invest in every couple of years. Those are 10, 15, 20 year leases. And that's very stable income from an investor if you happen to be the landlord of one of these buildings. And really it depends on what this, where they want to be, where the medical tenants want to be, and what the availability looks like. I mean, there's land available in the suburbs, but I think a nice thing is a lot or some of the adaptive reuse of, you know, existing office. I mean, there's a lot of vacant, we've talked about this a ton, there's a lot of vacant office space in the Chicago suburbs. So if that, some of that can be repurposed to medical office, I think that's a great reuse of the space. Otherwise, you know, if that doesn't meet some of the tenants' needs, then yes, they'll develop develop new, but it's kind of a win-win for patients, for the systems, and if it can help the real estate market by absorbing some of the vacant office space, I think it's great for the CRE industry in general.
Yeah, and it's not just a vacant office space too. I'm reading here that there some of these projects are in a vacant retail space.
Yeah, I mean, every time I have a retail deal I'm working on, a couple now, there's always at least one medical user. You know, there's the locations, they want to be near where foot traffic is. And, you know, if you can, you know, go in, pop in, get your flu shot, and then go to, you know, do your grocery shopping or pick up some swim shorts before summer starts, great. So I think, you know, a lot of the medical users do tend to concentrate not necessarily in medical office buildings, but also in retail centers.
We had been hearing a lot about telehealth, that that was probably one of the new things that more people were going to be doing, but this seems to fly in the face of that, right? These are physical spaces that people would go to, not looking into a camera and doing something over Skype or not Skype, but, you know, FaceTime or something like that.
Right, right. I think telehealth was kind of an experiment. I don't know if it's really going to stick around. I mean, when you are sick, you want to go see your doctor, you want to, you know, basically get a solution, whatever it is, if it's a prescription, you want to be seen and you want to talk to your doctor. I was never a big fan of the telehealth, so I think you're right. It does fly in the face of the telehealth trend. I don't think that really had great legs to begin with. I mean, you know, there's a certain segment of it. I wouldn't think it's very large, you know, population of instances of when people are utilizing telehealth over actually going to the doctor. And I think by medical systems making the doctor more accessible to patients, you're going to see less of that.
Dan, talk to us a little bit about the O'Hare industrial market. What is the O'Hare industrial market? And when they say that they have they're at a good point mid-year, should we pay attention to that?
You know, I think O'Hare's always been the strongest industrial market around Chicago. I mean, you benefit from, I think, the second busiest airport in the country in terms of cargo. And so it's always going to be a solid fundamental market, but it's expensive, right? I mean, everything I read, smaller users, there's just isn't enough space for smaller users. You're not going to get the million square foot, you know, industrial buildings that you do kind of near the train intermodals that are west of the city or near Joliet. The market in O'Hare is, I don't know if fragment's the right word, but it's smaller. It's the 50 to 100,000 square foot users, maybe 200,000 square foot users. And, you know, it's the businesses that need to be O'Hare, near O'Hare. Unfortunately, you pay a premium for being near O'Hare. But I think O'Hare will always be kind of the bellwether, the of how the Chicago industrial market overall kind of looks. I think O'Hare rent may get to a point where it's just really starting to get too burdensome for or too expensive for users, and maybe they'll go a little further south down 355, or they'll go for a little further west or north. But those are the areas around in and around O'Hare will always have a solid 3 to 95% occupancy. And it's just the nature of how well located that market is.
Yeah, I think the report that I saw said that there is currently a 4.6% vacancy rate, which is tremendous. And that comes even with all of the tariff concerns.
Right. I mean, tariffs are going to be a huge issue with O'Hare, right? If you're bringing in goods from around the country, odds are it's more economically feasible to do it via rail. Like, that's why you have, like I said, the larger buildings that are near the train intermodals. If you are bringing in goods from overseas, yes, then you absolutely have that tariff concern, and that's what O'Hare does, right? It brings in cargo from across the world, and if you're one of the users that need to be near O'Hare because that's where your product is coming into, then absolute tariffs are going to be a significant concern for the viability of your business and if you're expanding or if you're contracting.
All right, Dan, great conversation. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Thanks, Steve. Feel free to call me. My phone number, 312-544-4657, or my email address, daniel.behrens@associatedbank.com.
All right, Dan, we'll talk to you next time.